Hey everyone, this is 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. This episode, I'm joined by Curtis McElhaney, goaltender for the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe and rate on iTunes, Spotify, and all the streaming channels. Make sure you hit me up on the socials at MikeMcKenna56. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode with Curtis. Tons of wisdom here. Enjoy. After, you know, Kari Lehtinen went, what, second overall or third overall and had a great career. But there was a lot of depth, guys, you know, and for both of us coming out of college, did you have any expectation really that your career could have lasted as long as it currently has and, you know, all the ups and downs that have come with it and that we're still sitting here talking hockey all these years later?
No, I mean, I had no idea. It was just one of those things, you're very naive about it, right? Like you go into the situation, you just think, well, I make this jump to the American League or the East Coast League, and soon enough I'll be in the NHL and become a starting goalie. And, you know, 15, 18 years later, you'll be talking about it. But, you know, I, looking back on it now, it's been a wild ride, and I'm sure you can attest to your personal career as well, all the ups and downs you had throughout it, but very, very fortunate to have gone through it so far.
When you went to Colorado College, did you go there expecting to be a student athlete and, you know, hopefully hockey ends up working out, or were you still really focused on making it to pro hockey down the road if you could?
Yeah, the hockey was my main focus. I looked at a few other schools. The situation at Colorado College was ideal, and that I would have been had the opportunity to become the starter in the second year. I was playing behind a senior that freshman year. So that factored into it. You know, as far as development goes, I went to a WHL training camp. I did not feel that I was prepared when I was 17 years old to handle that type of hockey and maybe living away from home in that environment. So I think for me, the college was a little bit slower development route. And that's the reason that I kind of leaned into that way.
You walked into a pretty good scenario, though. Teams were good there. I mean, you can probably attest to some of the teammates you had. And you, man, you were like a winning machine. Like, was it all you, or was that just the part of the greater whole? Because like freshman year, didn't play a ton. Sophomore year, you started to start right away. And then senior year was just a monster. Was there kind of a natural progression to your game throughout the years?
No, I'll give credit. I mean, we had a couple Hobie Baker winners, a lot of NHL draft picks come out of there in my time, and just some really, really solid teams. So I was a benefactor of a lot of them. You know, the timing of it, and that's what you look back on your career and you kind of say, I don't know how it happened, but the timing was impeccable, and it all just kind of came together and snowballed at the right time. So, yeah, I don't really attribute it. I mean, I just put in the work and tried showing up, and the results just came.
Was that a fun place to play and go to school?
I enjoyed it. Yeah. It was a very small, intimate school, you know, liberal arts environment, but being at the base of the mountains, something I personally love. So for me, it was ideal. The school environment itself was a little more challenging in that you cram, I think it was like a year's worth of work into 3.5 weeks of schooling. So it was a little unusual in that respect.
So you were a draft pick of Calgary, and again, going in the sixth round, I pipped you by 4 positions, probably the only thing I have on you in my career. what I wanted to know though, is like myself with Nashville, I went to several development camps with them while I was in college. Did you have that experience with Calgary while you were at Colorado College?
I did. Yeah, it was, I mean, clearly all I had to do was just drive down the road. I mean, I was at home most summers from school and training and doing my thing and, you know, getting that opportunity to go to those NHL camps and getting to work with their goalie coach at the time was pretty special. I mean, it was certainly an eye-opening experience when you saw what the jump was like, but it was ideal to say the least, and that I could just kind of get in my car and drive down for practice or workout that day with the guys.
So fast forward to 2005, and we end up in the Omaha, Nebraska area with the Exarban Knights, which a lot of people don't realize is just Nebraska backwards. And that was my first pro training camp, and you'd already been with Calgary during it, right? And then came down to Omaha, and your goalie partner there is Brent Cron, who was a first round pick, really highly touted. When you showed up in Omaha, did you expect right away that you were going to get a lot of games, or was it communicated to you by Calgary that there was kind of a plan for your development during that first season?
There was no idea what was going on. I came down there and I think I was a little bit late getting to training camp. And the only reason was that I sat down with Daryl Sutter at the time. And he told me, he's like, oh, I wanted to send you down a few days ago, but I forgot about you. And I just thought I was, you know, it was one of those things. I thought I was doing real well at training camp. And I, like I said, I was naive. I thought maybe there was an opportunity to make the team straight out of camp, but no, it just came down to him forgetting about me. And I got sent down a little bit later, but yeah, it was, you know, another ideal situation worked into. I think they had a shared farm team before that year. And, you know, this was the first year they needed a couple guys. Kron was, I think, the only prospect they had at the time that was under contract with them. And so they needed a second guy there.
Yeah, because that's, I kind of by de facto was like the number five, even though I didn't have a contract. You know, I was just a free agent invite. And it's funny you say that, though, about Daryl, because the next year when I got called up on the PTO and played with you, he didn't know how to pay me. He just, one day he walks up to me and he goes, so do I just pay you by the game? Or how does this work? And like, well, no, I signed a PTO that you signed as well. That's prorated on a daily basis. And it just was like such a wake up call to how like laissez-faire pro hockey can be at points, especially back then. I think it's just a little different.
Yeah. And it all depends on who's running it, right? You have some people who are very business oriented, and then you have just straight up hockey guys. Yeah. You know, sometimes they're the easiest to communicate with, but they don't have a full understanding of all the things that take place behind the scenes.
Yeah. You, man, that team ended up, you think about some of the people that came out of there though, too. We had some really good teammates. Giordano was there among others. Ryan McGill, who's now the assistant coach at the Vegas Golden Knights, is the head coach. Scotty Allen, the absolute legend of an assistant coach. Gilly was interesting to play for, huh? Did you enjoy your time with him? Did you learn different aspects of the game from playing under him?
No, I don't think I learned anything about the game. I just learned to make sure that I was ready for the game at all costs. And my first big mistake came, I think it was one of our opening games against the Chicago Wolves. It was a great team back when I broke into the league there. And Kron started the game. I think he may have given up like a couple goals early, and Gilly gave him a fast pull and looked down at me at the bench. And if you remember the benches down there, we kind of were sitting right next to the Wolves, so there's no separation. So I go to get up and I look under my seat. I've got my gloves on already. I'm looking for my helmet, but I can't find it anywhere. And I look down at the end of the bench to our trainer and I said, "You see my helmet anywhere?" He's like, "Nope." And if you remember that tunnel, he had to walk, I think it was probably 50 to 100 yards to get out to that bench.
It was a solid hike in that old cow palace.
All the way back down that tunnel to grab my helmet from the dressing room. I think the only reason I forgot it was because I was excited because I didn't have to wear a helmet as the backup on the bench. So I was worried about my hair.
Because in college we had to wear helmets.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And now it's like, I got to work on my hair and I got to look good on the bench. And the irony of it now is I don't have much hair left, but you know, it was, and Gilly just, he let me go in there for one shot. I made one save, thankfully. He pulled me back out, threw Kroner in. And then he just proceeded to yell at me for the next 5 minutes, which I'm not even sure if he watched any of the game. But, you know, he was good in terms of allowing me to understand what it took to be ready for professional hockey. Like, clearly was not ready.
Well, the funny part is that our second year pro, when I was called up and I was backing you up on the PTO, and you were on an absolute heater too. Like, you played an unbelievable month and a half. And I'm watching you play, and I had just played 3-3 in the coast. I went from Vegas to Long Beach to like San Diego or Phoenix or somewhere, and literally got called up that morning. And it's my fourth game in four nights. And I just get there in time to dress. And you allow a rebound goal late in the first, like a nothing goal. And then one immediately right in the second of the, in the start of the second. And all of a sudden I hear, "Hey, get in there." And I'm looking around. I'm like, there's no way he's talking. He's got to be talking to a defenseman. Like, there's no way he's talking to me. And sure enough, like, you're getting the hook and I'm coming in and I'm going, and it's against the Wolves who, like you said, were unbelievable. Yeah. Hadar, Krog, I mean, Sterling. And here I go in the game. It's like two quick ones and you're out. Like, I was not prepared for that.
He was a coach. You always had to be on your toes. You know, it all depends on those guys. And the tricky part about being a backup goalie is trying to figure out how those coaches operate. Some of them have a notoriously fast hook and others will just let a guy ride it out.
You know, my favorite memory of that time there, and I'm curious if you do too, but Super Bowl was during my time called up. and the Colts win. And assistant coach Scotty Allen is there, and he's a huge Colts fan. Do you remember his reaction skating out on the ice the next day for practice?
Didn't he have like a jacket or something like that? Was he wearing dressed up? Or, I mean, the little bulldog running around, he got pretty excited, but.
He had a jacket on with a Colts bandana, the Fu Manchu mustache, and he was smoking a cigar coming on the ice in full celebration.
Yeah, he was great. You know, and that's one of the things, I mean, about the minor leagues, you kind of get those characters and you get those fun experiences that at times are a little bit harder to find in the NHL just because it's more treated like a business and your results are the number one priority. But in the minors, it's fun. You get to enjoy a little bit of the game.
So you play 2 years in the American League, pretty heavy, and you end up playing a third year as well, but you get NHL games. And the hard part, I'm sure, was that it wasn't until, I guess, your 15th game or very late that you finally got a win. I'm curious when you felt like you finally thought you were ready for the NHL, you know, whether it was in the American League, whether it was when you finally got there, but how late into your pro career did you think, this is it, I'm right at the edge and I just need that opportunity to run with it?
It was probably the year I played in Springfield. I think I was around 28, 29. So it took a while because I got pushed out. It was after, you know, I got pushed out of the league. Those early years in Calgary were extremely tough. I was playing the third game in four nights behind Mika Kiprusoff, you know, an extremely, extremely challenging situation to go into for a backup goalie. I had no success in it. I think it was game 82 of that season that I got that win against Edmonton. And I wasn't even supposed to play the game because we were in a divisional race. And I think somebody had played an afternoon game and that meant that we couldn't move up or down. So they threw it to me at about 4 o'clock that night for the 7 o'clock game and said, okay, you can go in there, which probably helped me in the long run.
Wow. And that was Keenan coaching back then, right?
Yep.
How did that go? Fellow St. Lawrence alumni, Mike Keenan.
Mike was, you know, another one of those old school characters. I've crossed paths with him a few times since then. He's got nothing but love for each other, but it was, I certainly did not see eye to eye with him at the time and what he was looking for and expecting from me. And I'm sure he was disappointed to have me as the backup goalie, considering the results that he got at the time.
Well, at least you had a bit of a buffer. I mean, all I've heard is how laid back Mika Kiprusoff was, and especially like in terms of his equipment and his demeanor. Did you see a lot of that being his teammate?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say he's probably the only guy I've ever watched who's just kind of seemed to show up and get results. I mean, he's just got such a skill set that, you know, he could come in there, his equipment would just be flailing around. I don't think he'd ever change his skates, his pads. He might have worn one set of pads for the whole year, maybe switch the gloves. But, I mean, he could just show up to the rink, and it seemed like he was lights out on a regular basis. I mean, my first 2 years in the league, he played 76 games a year. That's ridiculous. I think the NHL record is 79 under Keenan.
It's Grant Fuhr.
In St. Louis
when I was growing up there.
So, I mean, that's just remarkable to think about. Even back then, I mean, that's unbelievable. That's literally no practice time. All I would see him do is just stretch, take saunas, and get a massage, and then get ready to go the next night.
So he was just
impressive.
He was just a freak of nature, really. He'd just go play. Yeah. Just a gamer.
Yeah. Just an old school hockey player. He'd just show up and play, and he was lights out. I mean, he's, you know, the closest thing I could find to him today would probably be Braden Point in our team. Just very laid back, seems to show up the rink, and it's just like a switch flips, and next thing you know, it's something to watch.
Was it nice to be surrounded by some of the, like, frankly, legends that were in that room, though? I mean, Jerome Ginla's there. Owen Nolan is there. You know, Craig Conroy, somebody who's regarded as being really good with that. Did they kind of help insulate you, though, from all the chaos that was going around you at the time?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot of big egos when you get older guys that have been around the league for a long time. And, you know, they're pretty well established and set in their ways. But, you know, in Calgary, we was kind of still trying to get back to that playoff success that they'd had in 03-04. So, you know, there were some things going on there I probably didn't fully comprehend at the time, but, you know, for me breaking in, it was good to get to watch those guys. You know, Kipper was unique in his own way. Jerome was special in just how he prepared and got ready. And for me, he was kind of, you know, I always fall in line pretty well with captains who are of that make and mold. So there were some pretty good leaders on that team.
You touched on it and you really surprised me with your answer saying that you didn't really feel NHL ready until, I mean, probably your seventh or eighth season pro, I think. And it was in the American League at the time. And you touched on it, how you ended up going away from Calgary, and you did, like, your career kind of went into a blender for a while. Like, you got some W-2s from all over. You went to Canada for a bit with Ottawa. We were basically following each other around. Oddly, we've got a lot of crossover with the teams we've played with. But I know you suffered a big injury there too, that you had to battle back from. Was there a point during that time frame when you went from Anaheim, Ottawa, Phoenix, Portland, Springfield, did you ever think, like, maybe this is it, maybe I'm not going to be able to keep playing? Or were you able to just process what you had ahead of you and keep forging forward?
Yeah, I thought when I got pushed out of the league, I was playing with Anaheim at the time. I'm trying to think now. I got traded there the year before, came back the next year, was on last year of a contract. I think I'd won 3 games in a row. Jonas Hiller was injured at the time. I think he might have got hit in the All-Star game, if I remember correctly. And then
it's
I lost.
It's nice when you get plunked in the All-Star game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And I lose 4 straight games. And I remember just, you know, I was borderline having like panic attacks, like just expecting a trade to happen. And sure enough, the night after that 4th loss, you know, boom, I'm on a flight down to Tampa, you know, to join the Lightning. But at that point, the career was just spiraling downwards. You know, I did not have any consistent success. I did not feel comfortable with how I was playing. There was no rhythm to the game. So I think it really took for me getting pushed out and then getting injured. And that was kind of the time away from the game was where I got to sit back and kind of look at a few things, evaluate a few things. And, you know, then next thing you know, you run into a goalie coach who kind of makes a few tweaks to your game that adds some success. And, you know, my confidence was built up that year playing back down in the minors and playing on a good team. So that certainly helped. And after that, it just, you know, it seems like it was all or nothing. You know,
yeah, and really playing a lot of games too, right? You catch it in 49 games worth in Springfield. You play some playoff games. It's nice when you've just been in a backup role the whole time, right? You never really get into a rhythm when you're doing that.
Yeah. I mean, those first 2 years in Calgary, sitting behind a guy who plays 76 games, that's not a recipe for success. No. I don't care who the goalie is. You know, you have to have your team play well. And when you're throwing into a game that's the third game in 4 nights, you never know what you're going to get. It helps when you've been playing regularly and you can kind of weather some storms. But if you haven't been playing, you have no feel for the game. So it can be challenging.
Yeah. Can you go a little bit into depth on what the injury was and what it took to come back from it?
Yeah, it was, I was playing in Portland, Maine at the time. Another one
Which
of your
is
destinations.
Oh, I love it. It was the only
one
place I felt like a second home.
I'll agree with you 100% on that. It was probably one of my favorite places to play hockey and just live in general. Great city. I think we were down in Manchester playing a game, and it was just a routine face-off in our zone. It goes D to D. Defenseman shoots it wide of the net. I kind of stretched out a little bit for it, and I just felt this pop. And I was convinced that the puck hit me, even though I watched it go 5 feet wide of the net. And I'm lying on the ice for probably the next 10 minutes. I get carried off. We drive back up to Portland, do all the x-rays and ultrasounds and all that fun stuff. And they told me I'd torn off both lower abdominals and fractured my pelvis. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how on earth is that possible? I was just trying to stretch out and make a save. And I think it was just due to all the, you know, the built up strength, wear and tear we put on the bodies over the year. So it was 9 months off before I touched the ice. And it was straight into training camp in Springfield, which was the lockout year. Yeah. And
that was pretty good hockey again. I remember that season, there was a lot of really, really good players in the American Hockey League.
Yeah. The American League was unbelievable that year. We had a lot of the Columbus's young prospects at the time. You know, it just, the speed and pace of the game just elevated to another level, which, you know, as a goalie sometimes makes it a little bit easier to play with.
Yeah. Had you started your family at that point? Cause I know, you know, your wife, Ashley, and you have 2 kids now, son and a daughter, but, was it tough going through all that though, with the family moving around and trying to find something that felt like home?
Yeah, we had, our daughter was born that second year in Anaheim, maybe 2 weeks before I got traded. So, and then I went down to Tampa for about 12 hours, came back to California, and then went up to Ottawa, and we finished the season living in a hotel room in Ottawa.
At the Brook Street?
Yeah, at the Brook Street Hotel. I was just sitting there hoping and praying that I was going to get one more shot at it. You know, found out at the end of the year that they wanted to go in a different direction, and that's kind of how I ended up out of the league. But yeah, we had had two kids, so we'd been dragging them all over. Got a cat too that I've been dragging around since day one in Omaha.
We've had a dog since Norfolk in 2008. He's diabetic, takes 32 units of insulin a day, and he just keeps rolling.
Yeah, I told my wife once the cat kicks it, I think that's the end of the career. So she's still going right now, thankfully, which is good because I've got a year left on this contract.
Right. Well, it kind of just wanted me to ask about at this point too. I mean, I know you have outside interests away from hockey that'll probably lead into what we'll talk about next, but you know, fishing's a huge thing for you, being outdoors, Colorado, mountain biking. A lot of that stuff is to just help you find balance in what you do on the ice.
Absolutely. I think the hardest thing sometimes to learn is the stuff away from the game is at times the most beneficial to you. And for me now, it's, you know, if I get a day to fish, I'm gone. And don't expect to hear from me. So hopefully I don't get traded while I'm out fishing. But, you know, the mountain biking, another thing I love to do when I'm living out in Colorado right here. It's a little tough in Florida, but I think there's a few spots around. And then the latest hobby I've picked up is archery. I've gotten into that. And that's been a blast. I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things, like it's a set time, set up every time I go to do it. So for me as a goalie and just kind of following that step-by-step process works out pretty well.
We're so methodical, aren't we?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Like, I've never thought about that, but archery does sound like something that would be completely up our alley. And like, you hear about everybody who they play guitar or they just have something that seems to be very hand-eye related, and archery fits that bill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I've only been in it for about a year now, but I'm addicted.
Yeah. Well, going back to Springfield, that was your first crack at the Columbus organization. And you also mentioned how sometimes you meet somebody who really affects your game. And, you know, for me, stepping into Columbus a year later, after you'd gotten there and seeing the work that you'd done with Ian Clark and the work that I got to do with him too, and how he changed my game. It must have been kind of a defining moment to have that opportunity, I think. And, you know, talking to Ian about your time there was just, he was so impressed with how you were able to process pretty much everything that he threw at you, you know, embracing the journey, mastering it in weeks, and just processing information. Did you feel like that relationship with Clarkey was really kind of a turning point for your career?
Absolutely. But I mean, you know, you go back to it and you can attest to this. When you first meet Clarkey and you start working with him one-on-one, there's a lot of sandpaper in that relationship. And we yep. butted heads on countless times, you know. Not necessarily that I was trying to say, oh, I need to do it this way. You know, I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to learn. I feel like he had something that I didn't know about and that he could contribute to me. So I had something to gain from him. But, you know, he can at times be a challenging guy to work with. But, you know, I look back now and I'm like, man, that was probably, like you said, a turning point for my career in terms of the way I played the game, the way I thought about some things in the game. And, you know, before, I don't know if you were the same way, but I just grew up trying to find ways to have success. I mean, you knew about basic stuff, but as far as goalie goes, and you think about learning how to raise the right leg when you're down in a butterfly, I didn't think about any of that when I was growing up. It was just like, okay, if I hold my glove in this position, I have success at this level. But that necessarily wasn't the case when I made that jump to the next level. So Clarkey was very methodical about how he played the game of hockey. And I didn't always agree with him, but he's made me a heck of a lot better goalie.
Yeah, I think you have to have the right mentality when you're working with Clarkey too, right? You have to be willing to look at things through an incredibly analytical lens. And like him and I vibed, man, because I'd always thought about goalie from that way. And I'd had to coach myself. You know, I didn't have the luxury you did of seeing David Marcoux a decent amount when you were younger in your pro career and other goalie coaches. Like when you're in the minors in the coast or the A, you're fighting for yourself a lot. And so I saw it through that lens. But for everything you just said, Clarkey will say, my time with Curtis was some of my favorite coaching times, one of my favorite coaching relationships. So
yeah,
that's really, it's really cool to hear that and to see, you know,
he just wants you to put in the work, you know, like if you were there, you'd listen, you'd put in the work. He's going to be happy. I mean, there are certain guys where the ceiling is a little bit higher in terms of how they're going to be able to execute some of the things he wants you to do. But I think for our relationship, he looked at it and said, I maximized what I had to work with at that time. And, you know, that's all he was looking for. And I'll give that any day of the week, you know, to anyone if I feel like they've got something that I can improve my game personally.
I want to talk to you about Skin Effects Wraps, designed and produced by Mark Magnanti. Based out of Rochester, New York, small company, American company, professional vinyl wrapping, specializing in goalie masks. If you want a quick, affordable way to make your mask look good, I cannot recommend Mark enough at Skin Effects Wraps. He did a fantastic job for me this year when I was in a bit of a pinch. I had an old mask that just didn't look good when I would occasionally be on the ice practicing with the Vegas Golden Knights. So Mark helped me out, made it look great. The turnaround time was outstanding. You wouldn't even hardly tell that it wasn't traditional paint. The wrap looks so good on the mask. So if you're looking for something, again, quick, affordable way to get your mask looking good, looking right for the team that you're on, hit up Skin Effects Wraps on Facebook, Instagram, or send Mark an email at skineffectswraps@gmail.com. Thanks to them for helping me out, and thanks for supporting 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.
Something I noticed about your game, too, was just how you've been able to translate some of the things that your goalie partner does at times, too. Whether you know it or not, I can see parts of your game that have grown from playing with Sergei Bobrovsky, you know, for a great example to me, whether we're talking about reverse or just some other ways to do things. Is it something that you were conscious of throughout your career that learning via your goalie partner was something that would really help you out as well?
I think it's inevitable, you know, especially when you're the backup, you just watch guys, right? You know, you're watching them all the time. You're in sync with kind of where they're at and when they're playing. And, you know, it's like you have your little bucket list of things to check off when he gets to the rink. How's he looking? Is he looking good today? Is he feeling good? Is he going through his normal routine? Like,
am I going to end up in there midway through the first? That's what we're really doing.
Exactly. You're like, do I need to get dialed in here or what? But it's a very unique relationship between the starter and the backup, you know, one that I've been very lucky to do for a long time now. But yeah, you watch these guys on a nightly basis, and I'll watch Vassy now, and there's some things that he does where I'm just like, I wonder why he does that. I mean, you know, I'll see him, for example, like he'll almost turn his stick over on like a breakaway if a guy's going to his blocker side to try and make a little poke check, like a small poke check. And it's just an unbelievable move when you watch it. He did it a few times in the playoffs. And you're just like, gosh, I would never in a million years think to do something like that.
To use the backhand of the stick for a little poke, right?
Yeah. If he thinks that player's getting in tight and, you know, instead of following him over with the pad, he'll take it away right away. And, you know, the little things that some of these guys do, and they're each a little bit different in their careers. So, you know, it's fun to watch. I don't know. I'm not intentionally trying to make them sink into my game, but there are things that I'm like, I think I could add that to my game and make me better. So they are fun to watch in that respect. But if it's sinking in, it's just happening.
It's without me knowing about it. Natural osmosis. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was there anything from Bob, though, you can think of that really ended up kind of in your game and learning from him?
His attention to detail and his reverse, I think, was the big thing. And that was all the rage when I was back in Columbus. So that was our main emphasis on focusing on that and how you played those situations. So that was probably the big one I took away from him.
So you're known as a backup goalie, a number two, but you got to play a lot of games in Columbus. When Bob's hurt, you were able to step in and do a great job. I've always wondered this for you, because I felt like I had a similar feeling, but I want to see if it was the same way. Is that, have you always still had that itch that to be the number one, or have you ever just kind of realized, hey, okay, number two is my career path? Like, are you always wanting more?
Not anymore. No, for the longest time, I always, you know, you don't want to let that go. That's probably why I didn't have success when I first broke in, because I was asked to do one job and I couldn't focus on doing that job well in order to get to that next level of being a number one guy that could play 50 to 60 some games. And I fought it for a really long time. And I think when I started having success, it was more because I embraced the notion that hey, if I do this well in the dressing room and then that translates to on ice success, maybe that will lead to an opportunity where, you know, you take over for a guy for 6 weeks and you can kind of hold the fort down. Did I think that was going to lead to a starting role on another team or maybe in another season? Not really. Not once I got to 28, 29 years of age. It was just the reality had sunk in that this is what teams need you to be. Now you can either choose to excel at that role or, you know, you can just fight against it and you probably won't be in the league for very long.
Well, how about you go to Carolina and all of a sudden you're the oldest starting goalie in playoff history at 35?
I know. Yeah, that's priceless. I never thought I'd have a record, but that's quite the record to have, I guess. That year from start to finish in Carolina was just unique. I came in there with no intention of being there longer than it took Darling to return from his injury. And, you know, next thing you know, you're starting playoff games in the Eastern Conference final.
Well, that's what happens when you play well. I mean, were you really disappointed to leave Toronto and to be put on waivers and to go through that carousel again?
Yeah, I love my time in Toronto. I mean, I came there from Columbus. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you know, playing for an original six franchise is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my career. You know, the first year I got there from January on, we sneak into the playoffs in like the second to last game. And, you know, I get to come in relief and all these things that I'd been working on for so many years just seemed to come together in that season. And I don't know why that happened, but it was a special run, you know, playing playoff hockey in that market's pretty unique. So, I was disappointed with the way it unfolded and how it ended, but, you know, at the same point, you can attest to this. They had the new hot commodity coming up from the minor leagues who'd had a world of success and you had to promote that.
So beat me in the Calder Cup finals.
There you go. Yeah.
Maybe if I could have gotten a win in game seven, I could have saved your ass in Toronto, right?
Gosh, that would have been nice. I wish they had told me about it.
it just is kind of whirlwind to your career, you know, and what I've always admired is how well you've been able to bounce from scenario to scenario and have that reputation of just being the easiest guy to be around in the locker room. And I mean, I come to Columbus and we're trying to get my kid a pack and play and you give us one to go use at the hotel room. You know, that's special. And I don't think that that's something that everybody thinks of, but when I talk to people that know you, they always mention that about your work in the locker room, but really in the community too. Is it something that's always been at the forefront of your mind is being able to be an asset to the community and not just your team?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the time in Columbus, we got involved with a few literacy programs, which is fun. My wife, teacher, loves reading. So I mean, I don't even know how many books that we move around on an annual basis. You know what it's like to move. It's a
that
pain
was like
in the
our
butt
Halloween decorations, Christmas decorations, shoes.
Yeah. And for my wife, it seems that there's just crates upon crates of books. It's ridiculous. But you know, I love seeing a house full of books. That's kind of our thing. We like having them in the house. We got involved with that in Columbus. Other stuff now with the kids being involved with hockey, try and get out there every now and then. I actually got the opportunity to skate with my son's team on the ice. And it was more for my own well-being just to have some pucks flipped at me so I felt good about myself.
Coach Mac.
A couple snuck by. I won't admit to it to them, but I actually just missed them. They didn't score. But yeah, it's fun. It's nice. I think, you know, the older you get and the more time you spend around it, and when you start having kids and you've got the family and you're involved with the community and the schools a little bit more, it's nice to kind of see stuff outside the hockey world. A lot of times when you're young, you just go to the rink and back and you just hang out with your teammates day after day. And now I'm not really around them as much. And that's kind of been a nice thing because it allows you to get to know an area as well when you're living there.
Really reverts back to what we talked about earlier, just finding balance outside the game. You know, there's so much out there for players if they just look for it, you know, that can take their mind off hockey. And to me, like, it makes them a better player down the road, you know, well-rounded individuals. It's not just hockey, hockey, hockey all the time.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to escape from when all you do is spend your time training all off season for it, thinking about it during the season and even in the off season. And, you know, I really think there's a lot. I think some of my greatest success has really come from not thinking about hockey. It's stuff that I've done outside, you know, the time I've been able to take my mind off it, because as a goalie, it's, you know, it's challenging. It's like, there's always something I'm thinking about to get better at, you know, whether it's an equipment improvement or, you know, something technically or something mentally that I could be doing, or physically a way that I could be improving my body to prepare.
So you said the magic word, equipment. Tell me about it. You've had a journey, man. I remember Omaha. You went from, I think, Vaughan to Sherwood for a while, to CCM, to Bauer, yeah, back with CCM, maybe Lefave in there. What's your current setup like? Do you have anything that's unique that people would find interesting about your gear?
I don't know. I feel like that's a whole nother podcast. The gear is, you know, there's a lot of custom stuff that's been done to it over the years. I've got it pretty dialed in. A lot of it came because of injuries. I started untucking a chest protector when I was in Columbus because Bob started doing it. And I just, like, my eyes were open to how free I felt finally. That, you didn't take those stingers off the chest every now and then. You had a little bit of an air cushion in there. Skates are something I'm always dabbling with, profiles. You know, it's all sorts of weird stuff.
What's your hollow right now?
I think I'm down to 3/4. I mean, I switched to the true one piece skate. I think I only have, like, there's no laces in it. I have like 4 laces done up. That's it. Like, I leave the top 2 eyelets undone. I have like unbelievable mobility in them. I never even got to wear them in a game because Vassy stole every game. He wouldn't share any of the ice, even in the preseason and playoffs. He's like, no, I'm not coming out. So I haven't got to actually test them out in a game, but they felt pretty good in practice.
Everything else pretty normal, pads, glove, block. I mean, blocker and glove are pretty normal, but your pads, you've always tinkered, I think, with strapping and some other things too, right?
They're loose, yeah. That's to accommodate like a custom knee pad that I built up over the years as a result of like more injuries and knee surgeries and things that needed to be tweaked. But the strapping, I think, is pretty standard. I think it, what do they call that? Behind the calf strap, is it like a Scrivens strap or
the professor strap?
The professor strap.
Shout that's out what to it's Ben called. Scrivens.
Ben Scrivens, there you go. I've got that, and then maybe like 1 leather strap. And I don't know.
Isn't it amazing how simple? Isn't it amazing how simplified it's gotten from when we started? And we had probably 30 straps on every pad.
Yeah, and now it's all, and they were done up as tight as you could. Now most of the stuff is Velcro. I mean, we saw that in the playoffs with Vassy's pad flopping around. I don't remember what game it was, but, you know, that's a tough one. I mean, we even saw that the year before with Tuukka and losing the skate blade now that you have all the interchangeable blades. So I don't know what to say about that as a goalie. I mean, I get it. Like, you still have to kind of react, but at the same point, you'd think, man, there's a possibility that your guy could get hurt just standing around. And I mean, if you think about that, if Vassy had taken a shot off the shin or the knee while his pad's flopping around, I mean, that just doesn't seem right to me. So I don't know, maybe something to talk about down the road, but.
Well, you get the PA on it. You know, they've always got your ear. Get on the committee, maybe. I mean, Ryan Miller's got, he's always had our back, right? He's our, it was him and Schneider that were the union reps for the goalies on the
committees. Goalie guys, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've talked about it a decent amount. This year, pretty special. Spend 15 years in the game, and you end up winning a Stanley Cup. And I'm curious, though, in your decision to go to Tampa Bay to start all this. And, you know, there's a quote from Julian Brisebois that it was your combination of talent, having a good season before, and experience and temperament is why he felt you were the perfect fit. And lo and behold, it turned out to be a good choice. What was it like this year for you? Why'd you end up going to Tampa and just going on that run? I mean, what an experience.
Yeah, we looked at, I mean, the year in Carolina was incredible. You know, we considered going back. We looked at a few opportunities in other cities. And, you know, that was the nice thing about the season is that it opened up a few doors. And I did not see Tampa on the radar at all.
I think your playoff experience was a huge part of that too. Like, you played great games in the playoffs. That always opens doors.
Yeah. And so it just kind of seemed like a no-brainer. I mean, there was clearly, once you get to my age, you're looking for term on a contract, and Tampa was offering the 2 years, which was huge. So, and then the makeup of the team coming off the a first round loss to Columbus the year before, which was pretty humiliating for the organization. So, you know, you had a lot of pissed off individuals who were looking to get back and kind of get after it again. And, you know, it's hard to go wrong when you've got guys like Stamkos and Hedman, Vasilevskiy as your starting goalie, and Kucherov there, and, you know, Point, who I really wasn't on my radar until I got to Tampa. But, you know, you just have some superstar players that can make the game pretty easy for you on many nights. So, you know, it's just a matter of them getting over that hump, and they certainly had the talent to do it. So, but it wasn't very good to start. I'll say that when we first got here, I mean, I think just that memory of the Columbus series was fresh in everyone's mind. So, you know, there were some bumpy parts. It was really, I would say, our trip to Sweden that we went over there. We had a lot of fun. Got a full week over there, a couple games against Buffalo, a couple wins, thankfully. And, you know, just kind of one of those bonding moments for the team as a whole that I think was a turning point in the season for us.
And then it all went to hell and it went on pause.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you think we were really going to get back and finish this season?
Absolutely not. I mean, now that I look back on it and I think, I'm like, well, when I was in the bubble, it seemed to go off pretty seamlessly. But thinking about it beforehand, I'm like, there's no chance you're going to be able to pull this off. And, you know, we didn't know what direction this pandemic was going to take. And, you know, for them to put it all together and to have the players agree to it, and for everybody to come together and for the most part, make it go off seamlessly, was pretty impressive. So, you know, I can say I enjoyed it, obviously, because we came out on the right end of it.
You got a ring, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, going into the pause with this team, I mean, we had made a couple big trades for Blake Coleman, and, you know, it was, I don't know. I mean, it's tough when you make trades, you don't, it doesn't click right away, and you're looking for these guys to contribute. You don't see it immediately, and you're just like, oh, do we make the right move? But those 4 months off was probably the best thing for this organization. You know, it allowed everybody to get away, go home, and then reconvene. And once we came back, we were pretty dialed in, and that line ended up being tremendous for us.
Oh, man. There's a lot to talk about and unpack. I mean, how about Stammer hops out for 3 minutes? Pots one. That's enough. You know,
crazy. That's, absolutely, I mean, crazy.
We sat next to each other on the team bus the year I was in Tampa, my first year in the league and his rookie season. And to see him grind for this long and finally get a cup and to be able to do that in that moment was just, it was unbelievable to watch. I can't imagine what it was like from your end on the bench seeing it.
Yeah, it was special. I, you know, what's funny is we were in Toronto and the backup goalies were sitting in the tunnel there, like where every team would walk out. And I was excited to get to Edmonton because when I was watching the games on TV, I'm like, oh, look, they got the backup sitting on the bench. I'll get to be on the bench with the boys. And
which is so much better. It's awful when we can't sit on the bench, like Montreal.
Terrible.
And you don't even feel like you're part of the game.
The only thing good about Montreal is, you know, the hot dogs are probably coming
down
around the second
and
period.
And they've added smoked meat sandwiches too.
Yeah. Well, no, then I was excited to get to Edmonton to sit on the bench. And sure enough, we were dressing 11 forward, 7 defensemen. So the defensemen were all crammed down, so I couldn't sit on the bench. So I was sitting in the video room watching for offsides with the coaches, which was actually kind of nice. It was pretty relaxing being back there, just hanging out. We were looking for all sorts of plays, just tearing up everybody on the video, having a good time. But yeah, we were in that coach's room, and you know, you watched the reaction on the bench when he got out there. He made that little move at Dallas's bench. And I mean, that's, I don't know. It just gives you chills when you see stuff like that. You know, that's when you know your season's kind of special. It's heading in the right direction. We had some guys that weren't like totally sure about the bubble and how it was going to come off, then came to the bubble and were just absolute beasts, you know, all playoffs long. You know, it was a pretty special run. And it's kind of one of those things, like, you think about it and people are like, well, it's not the traditional playoffs. And you're like, well, if you were on the ice and you saw what takes part inside the glass, you would say it was every bit as real playoffs as you could have found.
I look at your career and I look at what you did, and you didn't play a minute in playoffs. You went through the whole pause and didn't get anything.
I blame Vassy. Couldn't give me a minute.
Exactly. So I've got a two-part question for this. And first is, have you ever gotten to the point where you don't feel nervous when you're backing up? Because I always felt nervous. And then the other part to it is that, can you maybe explain the importance that you had to the Tampa Bay Lightning for people that may not realize what a number two guy does, whether it's eating pucks day in, day out at practice, being ready at all times, being a safety blanket for their teammates. Can you just give some insight into what that is like and to still be part of a Stanley Cup and how special it is, even without touching the ice?
Yeah. I still get nervous. I think the hardest games are sometimes always the preseason games because you've been away for so long. And now we're looking at it and I've been off the ice since last March. So I can only imagine what the next preseason game is going to look like when we finally get that back together. So those nerves are always there. As far as what I bring to the table, you know, that's a tough one. And I think it's one of those things, you know, like we're so caught up right now with all the analytics and the on-ice performance. And this is, I think, was really the pivotal point for me in allowing me to have success, was realizing that I needed to contribute to that number one guy in terms of just being able to talk to him in the dressing room. I think, you know, every team has an NHL goalie coach now, and a lot of minor league teams do, but a goalie coach is a lot different than having a backup goalie who's pulling for you, not necessarily fighting against you. You know, sometimes you'll have a young guy that's looking to steal minutes away from you. And you know, I think that's kind of the trend now. You know, a lot of teams are doing 1A, 1B. There's not a lot of teams that have a traditional starting goalie and just a straight-up backup goalie. And that role may be diminishing a little bit, but I still think there's some value in it. I still think, you know, as long as you look at that guy and you say, okay, he should be able to hold his own on most nights. You know, he's not going to be costing us games left, right, and center. The reality of it is your starting goalie is getting you into the playoffs and is going to be taking you all the way if you have any hope of making it. So I don't think many teams are looking at their backup goalie as the guy, like, this is the guy that's going to win you the cup, you know? So my role is really about adding value to Vasi. How do I do that? I mean, it's really tough to quantify, like, you know, hey, I'm a nice guy. Hey, I can talk to you. You know, we can have conversations, but it's about getting to know him a little bit. I mean, we don't, and I've been this way with most of the guys. We don't hang out a ton off the ice, but I don't need to. I'm almost kind of waiting on his every beck and call. And I'm trying to be in sync with him and kind of keep my finger on his pulse and where he's at. And if there's something I think he needs, maybe I can say something. Maybe sometimes I just need to leave him alone. And it you know, it sounds like such a simple thing, but it's not.
It takes a lot of experience to know when to do that. Especially it's in, like, an NHL locker room with somebody like the Big Cat, who is as skilled as he is.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not teaching that guy anything technical. Right. And, you know, all I hope is he's not watching my game and picking up anything. So, but, you know, we get along well. I try to push him if I can, you know, and I'm doing drills with him. I'm trying to do it at his speed, which is ungodly, but, you know, it's been fun. It's been unique in that I've gotten to work with so many guys now, and they're each a little different, and each guy needs something a little bit different. So it's like, I'm kind of blending in with whoever that guy is. And, you know, it was important for me once we signed here to get down to Tampa, and you know, Vasi was in town for most of last summer, and I wanted to get out, skate with him. And the very first drill he does when we get on the ice to do warm-up drills, which to me is just like lubing up the joints and kind of moving the blood around the body, he's hitting reverse VHs on the post. And I'm like, there's no way. I'm like, okay, kid, I understand you're 25, 26. I'm like, you can do that. I cannot do that anymore. I'm like, we need to warm up before we start doing that stuff. I'm like, I will join that party in about 30 minutes after warm up, you know? And so, you know, but we get along great. He loves to fish, so I talked to him about that. You know, I don't know what else there really is to discuss. There are some technical things that we can go over, but, you know, it's really just trying to gauge where he's at on a day-to-day basis when I see him in the room.
You win the Stanley Cup, and the camera pans over to you, and next thing you know, we see your parents on the ice with you. And I mean, I got tears in my eyes, you know, and we're friends, right? We've played together. We talk occasionally, but I've never met your parents before, but that moment is something I think we can all relate to. The chance to really share something that special with family in the moment. And it had to be tough not having your whole family there, you know, your wife and kids, but can you even encapsulate the feeling of being able to lift the cup and have people in the building, especially in such an odd scenario as in the bubble?
No, it was just such a bizarre, I mean, the fact that we ended up in Edmonton, you know, the fact that, you know, families were allowed to come in if, you know, you lived in Toronto, I think it was, or you had to be in Canada essentially in order to get into that bubble. And for them to get that opportunity, they made it up for game two. I think they did a 7-day at home quarantine. Then they got to Edmonton and did 5 more days in their room, never coming out, which to me, I don't know if I could do 5 straight days locked in a hotel room. But, you know, they were great. It was pretty special to watch them there. My dad's a super hockey fan. He's, you know, he's the type of guy that if he's staying at our house and he knows I need to have a pregame nap, he'll make sure that he's out of the house for the entire time so that he doesn't make any noise. And he's lived and breathed every minute of my career. And it was pretty special to be able to share that with him and my mom. And I think one of the unique things we were all doing when we got the Stanley Cup, we were at center ice and everybody was just doing a little lap in front of the cameras. I mean, traditionally you do the full lap around the rink to all the people who are there, but obviously there's, I think we had like maybe 7 or 8 parents that were in the building or family members. And so my parents were still up. So I did the lap down towards the suite that they were in. It was special. I mean, they were down on the ice. They were down in the dressing room afterwards partying with us and having a great time. My dad got to drink out of the cup. I got a photo of that, which was pretty cool. Just a very, very unique. I think that was probably one of the special things about this bubble is that when we won the cup, we weren't getting pulled in a million directions. I mean, everybody's phone was certainly blowing up, but it was just the team and the organization in that dressing room. And then the handful of family members that were able to make it in. And you know, it's nice to be able to take that cup and to go around and share it with the city and share it with other people, but it was awfully special to be in that room with all those guys afterwards celebrating that moment.
Have you ever been happier to get off a plane afterwards though when you landed in Tampa?
No, it was
high stepping down that down on the jetway.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I even shaved right away too. So nobody recognized me. The family didn't recognize me. But it was just so good to see the kids. You look at them, I think it looked like each of them had grown like 3-4 inches. We were in there for about 65 days. So just a tremendous, tremendous feeling coming back to that, you know, and then the next couple of days in Tampa were just a blast.
Can we talk about the big rig just for a bit? Fellow St. Louisan, Pat Maroon, have you seen a performance like that before in person?
Which performance are you referring to? Is on ice one, is off ice one, just lump them all together?
Yeah, just as a whole. I mean, just a special human being.
He's great. And I think Patty was really you can just see it in everything that he does. He's the life of any room that he walks into. He's always got a smile on his face. He's always having a good time. I spoke about that trip that Tampa took to Sweden, and he was really the galvanizing force behind making sure that everybody has a good time, you know, and we all go out and we celebrate, you know. Patty's front and center of every situation. So he's one of those guys you just love, you know. I love his work down low in the corners when he's got that big body and he's just protecting that puck and making some plays.
He's got sick hands though. He's really good hands.
Yeah. And I think he's got those roller hockey hands.
Derby.
Yeah. So he's a great guy. You know, it's pretty cool to see that they brought him back for 2 more years. I think, you know, he's somebody that everybody appreciates in the room and just a great personality. You know, you spend any time around him and you just instantaneously love that guy.
Yeah.
Now he's got this little celebrity cult thing going on with his Florida man. And I saw all these Halloween costumes.
They're amazing. He kept reposting them to his Instagram. Anytime somebody would send him one, he'd say, and it's just a shirtless dude with a scarf and a Bud Light. Pretty good.
What a look. I mean, yeah, yep. He's got the body, that's for sure.
He's got branding down to his science. So I know there's a lot of unknowns going forward, and we don't know if you'll have a chance to have a day with the Cup. Maybe you will, but if you have that opportunity, what would you like to do with the Stanley Cup?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that we've been trying to figure out as an organization, what's going to happen. If it's, you know, if there is anything that you can do this year, great. But I mean, I would probably take it to Colorado. I'll say right now, that's our hometown, like up in the mountains there. I love that area. I'd love to share that with some people out there. You know, and then I'd have to invite a lot of family down from Calgary and sort all that out. So Calgary is another place I'd consider going. Right now, it hasn't really been ironed out. I don't want to say one over the other, but I would probably lean towards Colorado right now. I'm up in Steamboat Springs. It's a special place for me. It's where I plan to retire and spend my time and call home. So I'd love to take it back there, share that with the hockey community, you know, share that with some of the friends that I've made, and just, you know, let them enjoy it. I mean, it's such a special trophy. I had an opportunity here to take it to my son's team, their practice one day. And, you know, I think the best thing about it now is, you know, lifting it over your head is special every time, but watching the reaction of kids and parents and anyone who sees that thing for the first time in person is unique. And if you're a fan of hockey at all and you get that opportunity, it's just, there's nothing else like it. You know, it's a special trophy. You know, I think it was game one, we had a cup final and they brought it out and they put it up behind the two benches there. And you just looked at it and you're like, oh, it's so close. Maybe we should just run up and grab it. You know, it's, I never thought it was going to happen throughout my career. You know, it was like the less concerned I was about winning it, the closer we ended up getting to it. You know, here we are. It culminated in the winning it this season. And I don't know, it's pretty special. We got the pictures of our names being on it now. And, you know, that's something that I don't think that ring will be off the cup until I'm dead. So, you know, it's pretty special to see. That's for sure.
It's been quite a ride, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. Yeah. I hope there's at least another year, maybe two, if I can squeak it out. But I think it is, like I said, it's going to come down to the cat living. And if my wife's willing to put up with me for that much longer playing hockey.
Well, I hope it goes as long as you want it to go and you have the chance to accomplish whatever you want to. And it's been an awful lot of fun digging deep on your story and from one fellow round six of 2002, talking to the greatest 176th overall pick of all time, in my eyes. Curtis, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
I want to thank Curtis McElhaney for coming on 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. A pro's pro. He's done it the right way for years, and he's been grinding for, you know, more than a decade. And you get to the point where you win a Stanley Cup, you get to enjoy it with your parents this late in a career. Just amazing to think about, and there's so much wisdom in what he has to say. And if you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe, rate, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me, Mike McKenna, on all the socials at MikeMcKenna56. And if you're interested in advertising on 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, please contact Believe at BLEAV.com. They'll hook you up. And I'm also available for online goalie coaching now, 44 Vision Hockey. I take video that you upload, I break it down, send it back to you, have a Zoom call, and we get after it. Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.